The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 10th chapter.
Glory to you, Lord.
Now, as Jesus and his disciples went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat at Jesus' feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things, but few things are needed, indeed only one. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
You may be seated. This is such a short passage, and yet there is so much here. If we look at the first couple verses again, here's what we read. We read that Jesus and his disciples were on their way. They enter a certain village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat at Jesus' feet and listened to what he was saying. Now, if we just stop there, we have this beautiful picture of discipleship. Mary and Martha together, they offer an ideal of how we as disciples are to live. Martha welcomes Jesus. A word here is diakonia. It's a word in the Greek that we are still used today to talk about service and ministry in the church. She does this holy work of showing hospitality to Jesus, which was a high virtue in that day. Mary sits at the feet of Jesus, which is the posture of a disciple listening to their teacher, a role that was traditionally reserved for men. And yet she listens attentively there, perhaps when Jesus' other disciples have not. What we've heard throughout the gospel is they keep messing up and not quite getting this discipleship thing. And yet here is Mary sitting like a disciple at the feet of Jesus, attentively listening. Something we're not so good at today is attentively listening for Jesus. So if only we could capture this and live like Mary and Martha in these first two verses, living out this holy hospitality and welcome, and attentively listening to Jesus with all the other noise that comes at us. That's what we see in this opening scene. But like anything that involves people, this peaceful ideal quickly changes. And so we go on to read that Martha is distracted by her many tasks. One scholar notes that word distracted has this sense of being pulled or dragged in different directions. So Martha is being pulled or dragged in different directions. Can anybody relate? Have you ever been there? How often have we been pulled in different directions? Sometimes so much so that we lose sight of why we're doing what we're doing in the first place, or we lose sight of what really matters. Martha is trying to live out this biblical ideal of hospitality, but she's pulled in so many directions trying to do it just right. And yet, I think there's more that's pulling at Martha here than just all the responsibilities of hosting a guest in her home. If we go back to the first reading today, today we read about Abraham welcoming three guests. And what we read is, it turns out God reveals God's self in these mysterious strangers. And in welcoming these three strangers, Abraham welcomes the presence of God. He does this holy hospitality, and then he kicks it into high gear. He goes and tells his wife to bake fresh bread for these guests. He tells his servant to prepare fresh meat. And then Abraham goes and, somewhat like Mary, focuses on these holy guests. He reveals a hospitality that is focused totally on the one you are welcoming. Now, Abraham's culture is similar to Martha's. Hospitality is this required virtue. Abraham welcomes his guests not knowing who they are or where they come from. And I think, what a great model of biblical hospitality for us. How might we welcome people we don't know, who we don't know where they come from, and yet we show that welcome. And yet, thanks to the cultural expectations of his day, Abraham has the luxury of going to tell his wife to bake the bread. He has a servant who can go and cook the meal, which frees him up to just be present with his holy guests. Martha has no such spouse or servants to do that background meal prep. She has to do it all on her own, and her culture insists that that is her place and that is what she shall do. And her culture tells her that that is Mary's place and what her sister Mary should be doing too, not sitting at the feet of Jesus. So Martha starts out well with this holy hospitality, but the more she's doing it, the more she's realizing she's missing everything Jesus is saying. And she sees her sister not at all doing the role that's expected of women in her day, but instead sitting as only a man could. As one scholar noted, in the posture of a student learning at the feet of his rabbi. That's how Mary sits. And so Martha ends up getting so focused on the expectations and the perceptions her culture's given her that she starts to miss the point of having Jesus there in the first place. And then she tries to pull Jesus into choosing, to taking her side and condemning her sister's countercultural actions, sitting at the feet of Jesus rather than serving in the kitchen. And so Jesus offers her a different invitation. He invites Martha into the one thing that's needed to understand the better part. He invites Martha to be freed from the expectations her culture puts on her and that she's trying to put on her sister, to be freed from the expectations she's putting on herself, and instead see that she too has a place by Jesus, a place previously only open to some people. Jesus affirms that that space is for Mary. It could be for Martha as well. Perhaps that place at the feet of Jesus is a place that's open to all people. We all live in a world that is constantly seeking to shape us and shape how we see this world, how we look at ourselves, how we perceive other people. And so often what's told to us or the assumptions we go to just aren't accurate. Or we get pulled in a lot of different directions rather than being shaped by Jesus. What are the things that Jesus makes possible that we never thought were possible before? How do we need our perceptions and our expectations and our lives reshaped by Jesus Christ today? This is life and death stuff. I came to experience the truth of that when I got to be on that service trip to San Diego earlier this month. Our week towards the beginning, we were driving, and I and one of our chaperones were in pretty heavy traffic on a 4-lane highway, and we were going down the lanes, going together, the 2 lanes, and all of a sudden, with all this traffic, we came upon a woman standing in the middle of those 2 lanes. Clearly not in her right mind. She was half clothed. She was stumbling, taking off more clothes. And it was not feasible for us to stop in that moment. And so one of us called 911 to try to get this woman help and try to express the urgency of the situation. There was a good chance she could be hit by a car. As the other chaperone pointed out so well, we were on our way to volunteer at an organization called PATH, which stands for People Assisting the Homeless. We'll share more about this trip later, but for now, at PATH, we got to talk to an outreach specialist who works directly to build relationships with people experiencing homelessness in hopes of getting them the support they need and getting them permanent housing. He wondered, how had we seen examples of homelessness so far in San Diego? And so our chaperone shared what we had just gone through, and he noted that was an extreme example, not something that he sees every day. He goes to a place in San Diego where there's 300 to 400 people who are experiencing homelessness. Again, his work is to build relationships by bringing a sandwich or a blanket, and then to really try to get to know them, to have that hospitality of getting to enter into who are they so that they can get the services they need and be set on a different path. Someone in our group asked, what are the root causes of homelessness? And according to this outreach specialist, he named some. Some are addiction. And then he also said a lack of a mental health diagnosis. The lack of the diagnosis, which then moves people to self-medicate So those two different things go hand in hand. There's also a lack of affordable or appropriate housing, and a lack of people who are willing to put themselves in a position to help. And then he shared about someone he knew well who's currently struggling with some of these challenges. And he pointed out that this person's problems started with a whole lot of things that were not his fault. And then this person made some bad choices that were his fault. And he's at a really low point right now. And this outreach specialist is hoping for change. He himself had once experienced homelessness, and now he works directly with people to get them on a different path. And as he was talking, he was suddenly reminded of this story of a woman he had just seen recently. He was volunteering at an organization. He was volunteering at a support group. And as he finished up volunteering, as that was done, this woman approached him and said, "Do you remember me?" He said, "No." And then he found out it was someone he had worked with 2 years before. 2 years before, she was in an incredibly dire situation, much like the woman we saw on the road, he said. She was living in between two freeways on a dirt patch in a very bad situation, so much so, he had to refer her to people who had more skills than he did to work with her. And there she was at this recovery group 2 years later, and he didn't recognize her because she was so changed. Changed for the better. He said, "We do this work all the time and we see these miracles, and this woman got the right kind of services, the right kind of support." And he said, "What we do to help people," he said, "it reminded me it works. That people can change from a desperate situation." And he said, he's still blown away by it. He experienced it firsthand, and this is life and death work. But as we hear these stories about people, what assumptions would we make about the woman that he talked about before she went through recovery? What assumptions do we make about the woman we saw in the middle of the road? What assumptions do we make about people like the person he talked about, who had a whole lot of tough stuff to deal with that wasn't his fault? And then what we probably see are the bad decisions they make that are his fault. What things do people say about other people in these situations, and what labels do we give? What kinds of things out there try to convince us that some people have less value than others? Because along comes Jesus, who welcomes Mary beyond all of his culture's expectations. He welcomes Mary and gives her a place like he would welcome any other disciple. Here is Jesus, whom I suspect may say that all people we label or about whom we have assumptions, that all of them could be welcomed and have a place at the feet of Jesus too. How do we do that kind of listening for Jesus? How do we live out that kind of hospitality? Jesus promises Martha that few things are needed, indeed, only one. And what is that one thing? It's Jesus, who's entered this world story, who's experienced the worst of what this world can do to someone, much like some of the people we met in San Diego. He was pushed to the margins and wrongly killed. And then God resurrects him, brings life where the world had condemned him to death. A promise that how things have been is not how things have to be. As Mary discovered, and we hope Martha did too, in our life and in this world, there's a possibility of something different. Hope for a future that is shaped not by all the worries and distractions, but shaped by Jesus Christ. We are claimed by Jesus, shaped by our crucified and risen Lord, that we might see ourselves and discover in others what God sees. People who are claimed and loved by God, given a place at the feet of Jesus together. Might that shape how we live our lives with the people around us each and every day. Amen.